for argument on our last case, 11-1708, Gardner v. Ally Financial Incorporated. I would say to both counsel that it would be useful to the panel as you go through your arguments to also address the issue that had been raised earlier by motion with regard to certification to the Maryland Court of Appeals.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Benjamin Carney, and I'm here representing the appellants, Gladys Gardner and Randolph Scott. The district court erred in this case in granting summary judgment in favor of the appellee, Ally Financial, who I'll call GMAC, and holding that a Maryland repossessed vehicle sale was public by virtue of the fact that GMAC called it public, and the GMAC sent around very vague ad in the newspaper about the repossessed vehicle sale. Regardless of the fact that there was a $1,000 cash deposit, which was required for anyone to even enter the auction premises to watch the sale, and regardless of the fact that this deposit is intended to and has the effect of keeping out people like the appellants who are debtors, it keeps them from being able to watch the sale and monitor the sale of their collateral. The district court held that the sale was public regardless of the fact that GMAC didn't tell the appellants about this deposit requirement when it sent them correspondence telling them that they could attend the sale and bring bidders if they wanted to. The district court held that the sale was public regardless of the fact that GMAC's own policy manuals characterized the sale as private, and regardless of the fact that GMAC's own policy manuals state that in any advertisement for an actual public sale, the advertisement must contain specific information about each vehicle to be sold, including the make, model, and year of the vehicle. And the district court held that the sale was public regardless of whether any non-car dealers had attended the sales at issue or whether any non-car dealers had ever attended any similar sales. And
Mr. Carney, I thought that was a very nice summary. I'm sure the appellees will have an equally availing summary. Are you entitled to a jury trial, a jury determination of the question public versus private?
I believe that we are, Your Honor.
And why do you, so your answer is, yes, it's a question of fact embedded in the statutory scheme.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have any authority for that?
Well, there are cases that indicate that there are a number of factors that make up whether a sale is public or private. Now, there are no cases directly on point in this circumstance.
From anywhere.
Yeah. On either side of the question. But there are cases that indicate that, for example, the Seventh Circuit in Ford Motor Credit versus Solway indicated that where there was a dealer-only auction, that was not a public sale. And there was a factual determination.
Why is that a factual issue and not a... I mean, you'll know what the facts are. You had to pay $1,000 to get in the door.
Yes.
You know what the ad is, and all those are facts. Why isn't a legal question for determination by a court as to whether those facts are a public sale under Maryland law or a private sale?
I think that at the end of the day, it may be a question that would be susceptible to summary judgment after full discovery. Once the facts are undisputed and it's plain what the facts are, I think that those facts need to be taken into account. And in fact, the district court essentially recognized the same thing. The district court said that it couldn't have made the decision that it made without the additional facts that were presented by the appellees in the form of the newspaper article.
Go ahead, Judge.
That would seem to say that you are not entitled to a jury trial on the issue of whether or not there's a public sale or a private sale, assuming that the facts of what constituted the action are established.
If the facts are established and there's no dispute about those, then, you know, any factual determination is susceptible to summary judgment. The problem here is that we don't know what those facts would be. We don't know that there would be a dispute about whether any non-dealers ever attended these sales, or whether there was ever a substantial number of non-dealers that attended the sales, whether there were people turned away.
Why does that make a difference?
Yeah, why is that material?
Because a dealer-only auction is not a public auction. If the auction is effectively open to only one segment of the population, then it is not a public auction. Here, I understand that GMAC has characterized the auction as public, and has also imposed a fee to get in. If you can just call an auction public and impose a fee and say that it's still public, the fee could be $1,000.
That doesn't seem to have much to do with whether dealers show up and nobody else shows up. I mean, if it's a facet of a public sale or a private sale, that when you show up and you have to pay $1,000 to walk in the door, that would seem to be the salient fact. And obviously the plaintiffs in this case, had they showed up and had $1,000, could have walked in the door. So it clearly wouldn't have been an all-dealer sale.
Well, but car dealers don't have to pay $1,000 to get in the door. And in fact, the appellant here did try to get in. Ms. Gardner showed up to the sale. GMAC had offered her, said that this is a public sale, and I quote, "You can attend the sale and bring bidders if you want." And that's exactly what she did. She went to watch the sale of her collateral.
And by the way, it is a refundable fee, of course, right?
It is a fee that has to be paid in cash or certified funds at the time.
Right.
And then it will be, my understanding is it will be mailed back in the form of a check from the auction house in the week.
You don't get it back that day.
You don't get it back that day, Your Honor.
I see.
And car dealers, however, can enter freely. And so there's a barrier imposed to the public attendance, which for debtors who have a real interest in seeing their vehicles be sold, making sure that that sale was commercially reasonable, it is an insurmountable barrier. Most of the time, people whose vehicles have been repossessed can't afford to pay a monthly payment. That's why the vehicle was repossessed. So a $1,000 fee to get in the door and even watch the sale of the collateral means that they can't monitor it.
Would there be a difference in the analysis or outcome if the advertisement included notice of the $1,000 fee?
The newspaper advertisement did include
it. Did include that.
The newspaper advertisement did. Now, the newspaper advertisement is in the auctions section of the newspaper. It's small.
Right.
It has no information about the specific vehicles to be sold. It's very hard to notice, and frankly, the appellants didn't know about it until it was brought up in this case by GMAC. But it does mention the $1,000 fee. However, what the appellants did get were these letters from GMAC.
That didn't mention it.
I think that it would certainly make the circumstances a little bit better if the appellants had been told about the non-refundable fee. But I think, again, at the end of the day, most times debtors don't have $1,000 available, especially for a week,
What if it was $1,000 bidder's deposit?
If it was $1,000 bidder's deposit, I think it would be a very different case. Because, again, I believe, and we've set this forth in the briefs, but one of the very important things in the Maryland law that governed these contracts and governed the repossession sales is that there's a distinction between private sales and public sales. Private sales are allowed. All that you have to do is tell the debtor that you're selling the vehicle at a private sale and give a full accounting of the sale, a full report about what happened at the sale, because they can't attend, because it's a private sale. If it's a public sale, that accounting isn't required. And the only reason for that is that a debtor can attend a public sale. There wouldn't be a need for a full accounting if the debtor could attend the private sale.
Why doesn't this case really come down to the decision of whether or not under Maryland law, charging a fee to enter the auction as opposed to a bidder's fee distinguishes it or not, public from private sale.
I believe that that is an important factor, and I think that that is a question that is central to this appeal. I think that there are other questions as well, however. I think that the district court relied on the advertising of the sale to make its determination that it was public without regard to whether there had been a public attendance at the sale and without regard to the $1,000 fee that was imposed to attend. But the advertising, I think, was woefully deficient. What we have in front of us, and again, the record is very limited, the evidence is very limited, because we didn't have a chance to even commence merits discovery. We provided an affidavit under Rule 56F to try to commence merits discovery once we received the summary judgment motion. But we weren't able to commence merits discovery. But based on the advertisements that are in the record, there is nothing that indicates any characteristic of the vehicles that are going to be sold at this sale. Again, GMAC...
There's nothing in the statute that requires that, is there?
Well, the statute requires... The statute imposes different requirements for public and private sales. And so it all falls under the what makes a public sale, what makes a private sale determination. And unfortunately, that's not spelled out. But it is spelled out in GMAC's own policy manuals. GMAC's own policy manuals, which are laid out in the briefs, and I can cite them if necessary.
Why would that be relevant under Maryland law?
Well, I think it provides an indication of the agreement that a public sale shares certain characteristics.
Even if you assume there is such an agreement, I mean, it seems like to me, perhaps I'm very wrong, that either the factor that you have an advertisement and you charge a fee, either that's a public sale or a private sale under Maryland law, one way or the other. Why isn't that right?
Well,
in terms of formulating the question,
I think that in terms of formulating a question to the Court of Appeals of Maryland,
or
in terms of
us,
okay, I think that's a very important factor. I think that the barrier to public attendance that's created by that $1,000 fee is significant in the determination of whether the sale is public or private. But again, adequate advertising is required, and I don't think that that was found here. That's not in the record here. There are a number of Maryland cases. Admittedly, those cases deal with real property sales because that's all that we have. There are no Maryland cases on point dealing with chattel sales. But with real property sales, advertisements must contain specific information about the property to be sold. And GMAC's policy manuals reflect the understanding that that also applies to sales of repossessed vehicles. So I think that the advertising question is also important. While I do believe that the $1,000 fee, whether that creates a barrier under Maryland law, is also very important. Thank you, Your Honor.
You've got some rebuttal time left.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Dr. Roth.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I will address the certification issue just in a moment, but I want to frame things a bit. I believe that this case was born out of two very fundamental misconceptions on the parts of the appellants. The first is, and it's stated right there in the complaint, the Scott complaint, paragraph 21, that the important Tuesday auction was not advertised. That's a statement that was made in the complaint, and it's an assumption based on the Baltimore Sun advertisement that we presented to the district court that is simply false. So they started off this case with the assumption falsely that there was no advertisements regarding this Tuesday auction. And the second misperception that the appellants made from the outset of this case.
I'm not sure why that's of concern to us now. We're way past that
fair enough, Your Honor.
Mistaken allegation.
Fair enough, Your Honor. I'm just trying to explain how this case got here.
Well, it's here.
Okay.
It's here.
Okay, fair enough. A second issue that has been with counsel from the outset is what, in fact, is a public auction?
Right. Under Maryland law.
Under Maryland law. Right. And that was also an issue that was never addressed until late in this case. And the definition of what a public law is.
Public auction.
I'm sorry, public auction is very well established. True, there is no case especially stating what does a public sale slash auction mean under the CLEC. But there is a plethora of authority, whether it's in the form of treatises, whether it's in the form of Maryland case law, or case law from this circuit, Inri Bishop, that defines what a public sale is. And it's
I don't think parties for either side have cited a case, not just from Maryland, but from anywhere, that have the factual nuance that we have here. Because obviously, bidder's deposits are probably the rule as opposed to the exception. But nobody cited a case that defines a public auction where there is a charge to the public to get into the auction.
That is not quite true. Permit me to state what the case law that we presented does say. We presented Piles, which defines generally what a public sale is. That public auction.
I'm sorry, was that a case name you mentioned?
Yes, Piles 109.
That's the Maryland case.
Yes. That defines a public auction as a method of selling property in a public forum through open and competitive bidding. We've cited Express Auction Services 127 Mich App 447, which has the same.
Do any of those cases have a fee for the public to enter the auction?
The cases defining public sale don't have a fee, but there are other cases that we have cited that have an admission fee that still pertain to a public event. So you are correct, Your Honor, that there is no case that expressly states an auction is can be public if there is a fee. But we do have cases that say an event can be public notwithstanding a fee. As a matter
of fact, there seems to be a qualitative difference, though, between where Judge Davis pays a fee to go to a performance of art and where he has to pay a fee because his car has been repossessed and he wants to protect his interest in that chattel property. There seem to be that would seem to me to be a fairly qualitative difference between those.
And I am not saying that it is not a qualitative difference. Under the law, though, we believe it is not a material difference. Again, the definition of a public sale under the cases that we have cited has two and only two elements. Was it advertised and was it open to the public? And obviously, I think we all agree that this auction was advertised weekly in the Baltimore Sun. We've submitted a full-page ad. The ad says time, place, et cetera. It talks about the admission refundable deposit requirement. They didn't know about that at the outset, but that is of the record, and that's what Judge Motz relied on. Now, what is public? There is no authority anywhere in any cases that have ever been cited suggesting that the mere existence of a barrier to entry to a sale or anything else renders something private. On the contrary, and this is something that has never been rebutted or addressed, even though we've been pounding on it since the outset of this case, and even though Judge Motz relied on it heavily in his thoughtful opinion, the Maryland legislature, when it was amending the CLEC, to include a option for private sales, which had different disclosure requirements, expressly stated repeatedly, and we've given in the joint appendix that legislative history, that there are barriers to entry to public auctions or sales, and they still reckon that the legislature still recognized that notwithstanding barriers to entry or some people not being able to attend for various reasons, that those events were public. And so the notion that something can't be public simply because there is a barrier of entry is not supported by any authority anywhere, and it's rebutted expressly by the legislative history. And of course, that's very important because we are interpreting what the word public auction or sale means within that specific statute.
I think that's a very fair presentation and submission. And it just seems to say to me, let the Maryland Court of Appeals decide this.
Well,
there's no law.
Your
right
Honor,
now, there's no law other than Judge Motz's opinion before us.
I appreciate that argument, and let me address that. And frankly, I wasn't expecting to address it, but I had a little faint concern, so I went back to the briefs because this court has previously denied the motion for certification. First of all, and this is not in the briefing that I presented, the federal courts now routinely interpret CLEC. We've obviously got Judge Motz's decision. The Fourth Circuit in the Epps case versus J.P. Morgan, which is just out, April 5th, 2012, at 2012 Westlaw 1134065, interpreted CLEC. It was a different issue. It was a preemption issue, but it still
did
got.
Did I write that case?
I'm sorry?
Did not write that case.
Did you write that case? Let's see.
He did.
Okay. Okay. So CLEC is something that this court has burrowed into.
And we're not afraid of CLEC.
Okay. And
this court is not afraid of any statute anywhere, anytime, any place.
Thank you very much. So just so you know that this court and the federal courts down below have looked at CLEC and interpreted CLEC. But if you take a look at the standards of certification and when a motion is going to be granted, as we've stated in our briefs, I think all the factors that courts look at when deciding whether to certify are not met here.
This question is dispositive of this case.
It is a...
If the Maryland Court of Appeals says Judge Motz got it right, that's the end of this case, right?
Yes, that
is the end
of this case.
And if the Maryland Court of Appeals says no, Judge Motz wrote a wonderful opinion, but on these facts, he got it wrong, it's not the end of the case.
I do not deny that this is a state law issue, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I do not deny, Your Honor, that this is a state
law... A dispositive issue of state law.
That this is a dispositive state law issue.
Okay.
I'm not going to deny that. On the other hand, if you take a look at this court's own standards as to when to certify a question, I don't think the standards have been met, notwithstanding what you're saying.
An issue of first impression
on a
dispositive issue of state law in a case that was, in fact, removed from state court.
Well, Your Honor, I understand your impulse. I understand your impulse, but I am going to respectfully disagree with you.
And I accept that.
Okay,
I mean,
and I'm going to disagree for the following reasons.
Okay.
And it's based on Fourth Circuit law on certification and other law by other federal courts.
If it helps,
first of all, the question
helps any. If I was arguing your case, I'd be doing that too.
Doing
you know exactly what you're doing.
And I would as well.
Well, I haven't done it yet, and I long for the opportunity to tell you that under applicable certification law, if it is reasonable and possible and not a difficult, tortuous effort to interpret state law, then it is incumbent upon this court to do so. And I think that we have cited a sufficient number of state law cases that allow you to do that, and state law authority and other authority that make the result not something that you have to guess at, Not something that is a coin toss, not something that's just an abstract thing where you don't have a sense of direction. State law gives you a direction, although it doesn't give you a final answer with controlling precedent. So all of the cases that we've cited in our brief, reestablish that fundamental point. Another thing that courts look to, including this court, in terms of certification issues, is the issue of state law routinely litigated? Is it an important issue that has appeared in court after case after court case? If so, then maybe the factors might militate more strongly in favor of certification. But as we all recognize, this is, at this point, a one-off case. And there is a lot of case law saying that certification is not favored in one-off cases.
Years ago, my good colleague, former colleague, Judge Fred Smalkin, late of the District of Maryland, had a case. And the issue was whether stepping off, under Maryland law, stepping off the curb outside the crosswalk was negligence per se, contributory negligence per se, Maryland being one of only three or four states that retain contributory negligence as an absolute bar. And Judge Smalkin, didn't certify, concluded as a matter of law, stepping off the curb in front of a vehicle outside of the crosswalk, he predicted that the Maryland Court of Appeals would say, yeah, that's contributory negligence as a matter of law. About a decade later, a little more, the case presenting that issue finally got before the Maryland Court of Appeals. You see where I'm going, don't you?
I do.
The Maryland Court of Appeals said, no, of course that's not contributory negligence as a matter of law. Facts matter. Context matters. And so I understand your argument, but the notion that we should wait until there have been three or four or five or six or seven cases that bring the same issue before we certify is at best counterintuitive.
Well,
this is an issue of first impression. Now, whether it gets litigated in the future might well be decided by how the Maryland Court of Appeals decides this case, if we certify.
I respect that very much, Your Honor. And if that were the only factor militating against certification, I would not be as strongly opposed to certification. But there are other factors.
Well, if I won below, I'd be strongly opposed to certification.
Well, but that gets to another issue, Your Honor. There is, and we've cited these in our briefs, there are many cases expressly holding you cannot raise the certification issue for the first time on appeal, particularly after you have lost below. And
the court can raise it sua sponte.
You can raise it sua sponte if that is your prerogative. It is your prerogative to raise the issue. But in terms of whether or not it is favored, whether or not it is something that is going to be done easily, courts do consider when, in fact, the issue has arisen.
In fact, Judge Motz, sua sponte, teed this issue up. And quite wisely so, it seems to me. He's a very, very fine judge, and he understood that rather than have the parties devote resources to discovery, if he could identify what he thought was an issue of law that might be dispositive, why not send the case up to the Fourth Circuit? That's exactly what he did.
Okay.
Yeah. And sua sponte.
Fair enough, but I still think that after we've been in the district court, after all the briefing has been done in the appellate court, after the appellants have lost on this issue in the district court, after the court has issued an opinion denying a motion for certification that was brought up, I think at a certain point timing does matter. And that gets to another issue, which is the parties have invested a lot of time, a lot of money in litigating this case. To this point, it is prepared. It is not some type of sphinx-like matter. It's fairly straightforward. I don't think the issue here is inscrutable. The issue here, I think, is straightforward, based on a straightforward application of Maryland law and a definition of a public auction that is straightforward. And the definition of a public auction has two and only two elements. Was there advertisement, and was it open to the public? And yes, there was an advertisement They didn't know about it, but there was an advertisement, and yes, it was open to the public. And as I think you properly framed this case, Judge Agee, the issue of the refundable deposit of $1,000 is the central issue in this case. Does that $1,000 deposit, standing alone, render something that otherwise unquestionably would be public? And I think the answer to that, and GMAC Ally thinks the answer to that, is very straightforward. No. There is no authority anywhere, and there's contrary authority, saying that a mere barrier to admission does not render something, standing alone, does not render something private. Now, the one, and I won't call it an evasion, but I'll call it a juke, that the other side has done and they continue to do today, is to create the impression that the mere fact that debtors were not necessarily automatically able to attend somehow renders something private. Again, that is, I think, a legal invention. There is nothing there in any of the statutory language, any of the legislative history or the case law that suggests that. On the contrary, Your Honor, the purpose of a public sale is to ensure commercial reasonableness. And as a matter of fact, in a lower court decision, it says something, and I just saw it a couple days ago, but I think it's very helpful. 2012 Westlaw 1057-7588. It says, in the case of a public auction, however, the commercial reasonableness of the process is virtually inherent in the nature of a fairly conducted auction, which means that the essence of
that's,
a...
That's from what court?
That is, admittedly, Your Honor, from the District of Maryland Court, addressing this statute. But it's a new decision. It just came out March 28th of this year. The point being that CLEC, and there's no authority anywhere to suggest that the legislature was concerned about debtors' right to attend. There was no debtors' right to attend. CLEC and the legislature was committed to making sure that there was a way of assessing the commercial or increasing the likelihood of a commercially reasonable sale. And they gave us two options, public and private. And a public sale, by definition, ensures that reasonableness. Point being, you don't need a debtor to attend to put his or her imprimatur on it or to confirm that, in fact, was reasonable. It's in the public aspect of the sale itself. So I would hope that this court appreciate, and thank you for your time, I would hope this court appreciates that this issue about debtors' attendance is a red herring that finds no authority in any of the cases, legislative history, and it's just a non-issue. As is, and I've got 27 seconds left, I think you appreciated our policies and procedures. They've misstated, cited, characterized them, but the bottom line is, as I believe you said, Judge Agee, the issue is, what does the law say, and how do you apply the facts to the law that are undisputed? And here there is no material dispute fact whatsoever that creates any question as to that fact that it was public and notwithstanding the desire for 56D discovery. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dockeroff. Mr. Carney, you've got some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honors. It may not be surprising, but I respectfully disagree with Mr. Dockeroff's position on the certification of the question to the Court of Appeals of Maryland. Appellants do believe that this is a situation where certification would be appropriate. I believe that issue is certainly one of first impression. There is no decision one way or the other on the Maryland law that's at issue, and there's no decision one way or the other on these specific facts with respect to any other state laws. The situation, this factual scenario and the legal implications of this factual scenario recur time after time, in fact. This may be the first case that we're aware of that has presented these specific questions, but as was alleged in the complaint, and as I think is undisputed, vehicles are sold at the Tuesday sales, which are at issue here, and people are told that these sales are public, and people are not provided with full accountings of these sales in hundreds or thousands of instances every year. So it's a situation that arises frequently, and it is something that the Court of Appeals should have an opportunity to take a look at. The case, as Judge Davis recognized, was filed in state court. It's a question of state law, and the determination on how the statute comes out on whether or not this is a public sale in light of the advertising issues, the imposition of the $1,000 cash fee to enter, and on whether or not there was actual public attendance at the auction, the way that the Court of Appeals comes out on that question will be dispositive of issues in this case. And it is, in fact, more efficient to send this case to the Court of Appeals of Maryland rather than to wait for a similar case to wend its way through the state courts and up to the Maryland Court of Appeals in another case. And I would also like to respond to a couple of other things that Mr. Doctorov discussed. Number one, I think there is a good deal of authority to suggest that public access to public sales matters and that debtor access to public sales matters. There's the dictionary definition of a public sale that was discussed in the John Deere Motors case is that a public sale is one that's accessible to or shared by all members of the community. And where there is a $1,000 fee to enter, it's simply not accessible to everybody. This court recognized in In re Bishop that a public sale is one to which the public is invited by advertisement to appear and bid at auction for goods to be sold. And the public didn't have access, free access to this auction. And again, I'd like to emphasize the point that debtor access is especially important and that there is authority that points out that debtor access to a sale, to a public sale, is an important aspect of the public nature of that sale. There's the Ford Motor Credit versus Solway case where the Seventh Circuit found that the purpose of giving a debtor notice of a public sale is to provide him with an opportunity to observe that the sale is conducted in a commercially reasonable manner. The Maryland Court of Appeals found in the Wathan case that at the very least, notice provides the opportunity to attend the sale to ensure that it is commercially reasonable. It was the secret disposition of collateral by chattel mortgage owners and others which the code sought to correct. And the reason is that without the debtor's attendance at the sale, as was said in the Randolph case, the debtor will be hard-pressed to produce evidence, even if it's available, to rebut the contention that the creditor disposed of the property at a reasonable price. With respect to Judge Davis's question about the question to the jury at the end of the day, I think there is a question to the jury about whether or not the amount of an entrance fee matters to making the sale public or not. If it's a $1,000 fee, does that make it does that make a difference between it being public or private? If it's $500, does that make a difference? If it's $100, does that make a difference?
The easy legislative fix, of course, is to provide a waiver for any owner or former owner of the vehicle being auctioned.
Certainly.
I mean, if I were a legislature, which I'm not, never have been, never want to be, that would be the carve out.
I think that would be a very easy legislative fix. Legislatively, nothing's easy. But I think that what would be the easiest of all fixes would be for GMAC to just say that the sale is private and give the debtors a full accounting. It's not difficult. All they have to do is say how many debts or how many bids were sought and received, whether there was any condition of the collateral at the time of sale that would cause it to sell for more or less than similar vehicles, and some other very minor information.
They might disagree with your characterization there, but that's not really relevant to our issue.
Well, I you can look at the statutory language, and it's all laid out there. It's in 12-1021, which was reproduced at the end of the briefs, that lays out exactly what is required and what's not required in those notices. And it would simply be a matter of providing a little bit more information. I understand that GMAC is probably not going to agree with anything that I say here today, but I'd also like to very briefly address the legislative history. I do think that the fact that we're going into legislative history, or that there's an attempt to go into legislative history, is another indication that this is a question that's properly disposed of by the Maryland Court of Appeals once and for all. But the legislative history that GMAC presents is far from dispositive. It's really quite hard to tell what the legislative history means. As the Supreme Court has said, legislative intent is more apparent from the words of the statute itself than from a patchwork record of statements inserted by individual legislators and proposals that may never have been adopted by a committee, which gives rise to the strong presumption that Congress expresses its intent through the language it chooses. And that's just the kind of legislative history we're dealing with here. It was one legislator, Senator Della, and in fact, reading that history, it looks like he's talking more about attendance or more about problems with bidding rather than attendance. And I thank the court very much for your
time. Thank you very much. We'll ask the clerk to adjourn court. And